no money. I want nothing. I want my God and I want my family. She was tampering in doubts that it stopped. She's not a Christian. The entire house is dark sided too. Gargoyles, psychics. This is tainted. I don't want it. Whatever it is, it's tainted. Everything. Whatever it is tainted. Everything's ungodly. Dark sided. I give it up to God. I'm a God warrior. And I don't want someone with tainted anything it believes doing anything with my family.
I'm glad you're home.
Get the hell out of my house. In Jesus' name, I pray. Get out!
I mean, the law of the country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men. And indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
It is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, November the what? 4th, 2005. And this would be, actually, you know what? This isn't even Thursday. God damn it, it's Friday. I hate it when I do that. It's actually Friday, November 5th, 2005. God damn it. Temporal shifting death affects everyone. I can't really help it. It's something to do with this approaching singularity we have happening. This would be Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep for corporate political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this, you are too. You can read all my news stories by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you are free to distribute this broadcast anywhere that you see fit. You can play along with our home game. Sorry, I just got carried away with my announcer voice. Let's get into some feedback right off the top, because this week, what do you mean week, Sean? You do this every goddamn day. Today, we have a fair amount of feedback. Greetings, Sean. I've read those two stories and pondered the recent data of why so many stories, I've read these two stories. I was wondering, Jesus Christ, if I could speak today, you know, I'd be a happy camper. Let's try that again, okay? Got some feedback. Here it is. Greetings, Sean. I read these two stories and pondered the recent data of so many stories about astronomy catching the mainstream headlines lately, which is true. There has been a seemingly large amount of astronomy headlines going on, probably because everyone's trying to talk about everything but what's going on inside the Bush administration right now, where everybody's being sent to jail. Please tell me something, Sean. Do you recall a time when there were so many stories about who gets to name what planet and all the objects in space are part of our solar system, etc.? Remember the recent argument over the internet data about the U.S. discovered a planet before a foreign team collected it and named it? I think 2005 may take the prize on our solar system's most talked about year so far as mainstream news stories go. Regardless, the question remains, why? Why do countries argue over who discovered what first? What do scientific experts argue over, and what gets labeled what? At first glance, it could be chalked up to ego or the history books. But what if there is more to it than that? I don't know, and I can't help but wonder if we need to lay claim to planetoids before someone else does, to protect our resources, whether we are racing against another country or an ET. I think there is a competition in who names what and who labels what, because there's some legal procedures at work to claim the rights of those unexplored resources. Well, that's a bit of a stretch. It's a bit of a stretch, but it's possible. So crank up the cruiser and load up the Space Marines and go check it out. Don't forget to plant a flag on For Freedom, okay? Scratch that. Get the cruiser prepped and ready for launch while I head up for a squadron of Marines. See ya at liftoff, December 5. Well, I gotta tell ya, there is a lot to be said for the whole Space Marine concept. And I oftentimes wonder, you know, I've oftentimes wondered what it is that is going to be, kind of heading us in that direction. Like, you notice now, there's more and more war about religion. So once they kill off religion, I think that that's when they're going to be talking about alien contact. I think 2012 and around that region there, they're going to be prepping us for a few years. That's when alien contact is going to hit. And I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of the alien contact. A lot of people seem to think that aliens are friendly creatures, all that kind of jazz. Now, whether or not you believe in UFOs, let's just step aside that for a moment. We're going to suspend disbelief and assume that some, not all, but some of these reports on UFOs are in fact accurate. Okay, there are little guys running around. Okay, maybe they're the Palladians or whatever the hell you want to call them, but they're out there. Now, it begs the question, are they friendly? Now, not to beat a dead horse here, but when you look at, you know, coming down to our house, cutting up all our cows, taking our women, you know, I mean, these aren't friendly things to do. These aren't really happy, shiny sort of, you know, friendship items to conduct on an alien world, so to speak. So I'm thinking that when these aliens show up, they're probably going to assume to be friendly. They'll be like all appearing friendly, but they will be exercising alien guile. And I don't mean the Street Fighter 2. I mean, I think they're going to be deceptive little saucer jockeys, and I'm not in the mood to deal with them on my world. So it is up to us as WOGs to make sure that we train ourselves in the ways of technology and perhaps, you know, a little bit of escape and evasion so that should the aliens land, holy shit, we all got our tomahawks ready. Just my point. That's all I'm trying to say here. Dear Sean, first off, my apologies. Well, apologies, I don't know. I've not been able to catch the show in several months. Several months? Real life tends to demand focus sometimes. I wouldn't know. I'm not part of real life. I try to stay as far away from real life as I possibly can. It's a depressing place loaded with all sorts of bloodshed. But, you know, I do totally understand. People apologize to me for saying, I can't check out the show. I'm sorry. Well, you know, hey, I do the show for you. If you want to download and listen to the show, great. If you don't download and listen to the show, there's more shows for you to download and listen to afterwards. You know, it's probably pretty handy when you think of guys like Fat Ninja who, you know, wind up having, you know, his truck and he's bombing across, you know, America. It's pretty cool, you know, that they're all downloading, listening to the show. It's about entertainment. It's about free media and it's about, you know, making sure that you have something that stimulates the brain so that you think a little bit even if you think I'm a fucking idiot. But anyway, he goes on to state here. I was in a large chain bookstore a few days ago, and for the hell of it, I wandered into the dieting section. Ooh, danger. If for nothing else, didn't give myself a chuckle over the inane bullshit floating across the shelves. Being a hobby dietitian, I picked apart the common vibe diets in audible tones of voice so as to attract attention of those around me, in hopes of engaging them in conversation. You little evangelist, you. That's a total evangelist tool. Well, this trip, amongst the plethora of junk on the shelf, a book caught my eye. The title, The 3-Hour Diet, blew my mind. What shit was this in front of me? I picked it up, and being the data whore I am, skimmed through it in about 20 minutes. Yes, it's another good idea with faulty premise, but the amount of data compiled is nearly every other major dieting technique in the past 40 years was nothing short of astounding. I recommend it strongly for reading, not based on the techniques taught within its pages, but rather the amount of information regarding the dangers of fad dieting, which is an interesting point. The book was written by George Cruz, that's George with a J, ISBN number 00607-922-99. Thanks, Sean. Keep it up, Kips. Well, I'll see what I can do. You know, I'm trying as best as I can. As long as I keep eating my eggs, I should be okay. Which, I got an email about that. Actually, I didn't get an email. There's a post on my live journal about that where they're saying, like, oh, wow, Sean, like, no duh, idiot. Obviously, eating a balanced breakfast. The breakfast is the most important meal of the day. What do you suppose that nobody was lying to you, you fucking moron? You know, which is true. I mean, Jesus Christ, when you think about it, having a solid breakfast, it probably does set you up for being in a better mood during the day, especially if you're one of these poor bastards such as myself who happened to put himself through all kinds of emotional turmoil throughout the day. Intense thinkers, I mean, the brain needs nutrition, burns off energy, all that good stuff. So, you know, no matter what, I've always been a big fan of breakfast. I think everybody should have breakfast, and I think that, you know, it's might be an idea. Might be an idea to possibly, you know, skip around from a lot of this bullshit and go with some good old farmer wisdom. Because although Maverick has a good point, it's a really good idea to go organic because God knows what they're putting in eggs these days. I would definitely think that whether or not you are into the whole, you know, not eating red meat thing or whatever, I think that probably people should be paying attention to what classically people have had for breakfast for years and years. I'm a big fan of breakfast. I think breakfast is important. Just thought I'd say that. Dear Sean, just to add to the waste gas thing, it's not entirely unknown practice here in the UK. As far as I know, it's been used for years in the landfill business by extracting the gas from rotting waste via wells sunk into the tip when it's used to generate electricity and sold to the national grid. Well, that's interesting. My local tip has three generators on each side and a 40-foot shipping container, each generating enough power to run 50 or so average houses. If the gas is left in the ground, it finds its way to the surface eventually and has been known to make its way up to the disused water well under someone's house. Scary. When they made a spark, the whole house went up in flames. Scary. Personally, I think this is a safe, sensible ideal to deal with the gas produced by anything which rots, but apparently, from what I hear, there is still environmental demonstrations about it. But if anyone can think of a better way to deal with the gas, I'd bet there'd be a ton of cash to be made there. P.S. The show is great and pretty much the highlight of my day. Wow, you need to change your lifestyle so that you have a better day, my friend. Please don't use my real name. I don't really have an online name, so a digital baptism would be nice. You are now hereby named Cryptic Vel. Have a nice life. And you are to work on making your life better every day, because if this is the highlight of your day, my God, man, you need to work on that. I mean, realistically, I've oftentimes wondered about that. You know, if your life is shit, which a lot of people's lives are. A lot of people's lives are just shit. You know, they're not happy, they're miserable, and they feel like they're trapped. You know, you get that trapped life is shit thing on the go. And I think, you know, that if you're willing to cut and run, I mean, there's a lot of things you could do if you, you know, of course, I can't really say that. I always seem to wind up gravitating towards militaries. You know, I've noticed that. I kind of slide towards the military. So there could be people out there that aren't in the military. But, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of different forces you could join. I mean, there's the, if you're in America, the American forces, they're screaming for people. I could get you out of wherever you're at. So it's a question of the devil you know versus the devil you don't. I always like to go to a position where, you know, I was recently thinking about joining the Israeli Defense Force. They seem to be needing people. Knew a good buddy of mine. He was talking to me about it. I was like, what do they make? And they're like, $300 a month. And I'm like, $300 a month? What kind of a fucking, in Israel? Holy cow. Like, that's not a lot of cash, you know? I mean, going out there and shooting at people and stuff. I mean, you know, and it's pretty serious over there in Israel. You know, I don't know if I'd want to risk my life for $300 a month. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to be making pretty good money, right? I mean, I'm not saying Blackwater is a serious, you know, kind of thing to do. But you got to spend big bucks just get on their courses. Then you're making like $600 a day with those guys. But Israel, $300 a month? I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, I guess you're guaranteed a place in heaven and all that kind of stuff. But I'm pretty sure that, I'd like to get my reward a little bit sooner rather than later, if you know what I'm saying. Anyway, it goes on to say here, Dear Sean, my brother from another mother. I, for one, believe that MMORGs are a frontier of exploration of exploration and adventure. This is those multi online player role playing games or whatever they are. MMPOGs is what he calls them. I don't know. Actually, I'm so totally out of the loop on these things. I don't even know if an MMPOG, if I'm saying that wrong or what. But anyway, the frontier of exploration and adventure. The relationship between virtual worlds and the reality of life as we know it here on Earth. The business of creating, distributing, administering the product of an MMPOG provides real-world jobs and a craft for professionals to forge. That business provides a venue for consumers where imagination truly is the limit. I think that the below article in this morning illustrates the situation well. A virtual world is a medium for so much. The article is talking about how they're going to make a virtual space station. Real-world artists get to create, perform, and get their art to the mass consumers. I'm one of the many gamers that have beta-tested massive multiplayer online games. My first official beta was with Ultima Online, and I watched the small businessman success rise, and when the fall of Electronic Arts moved in for the kill. I helped the creators of that product craft their art, and I helped build a virtual world, though interaction with other people both on the virtual world and the real world, social events. I quit playing the game years ago, but those friendships continue over the phone and at birthday parties, and in some cases in new virtual worlds. I watch people learn and grow as they explored and worked. This is an opportunity in a virtual world that is difficult to find in the real world. That opportunity is to more safely affect change and make choices in how you interact with the world around you. The politics are different, and the laws are less constraining. There's room to maneuver with less chance of ending up in prison. I enjoyed the battles of an avatar in that game. Beyond that, I enjoyed the feelings that conjured within me when I protected the innocents that didn't have any PVB skill. Coming from a man that served in the military in harm's way on foreign soil, I know firsthand the feeling of being a soldier in harm's way. The risks are different, but I'm telling you, Sean, the psychological aspects and factors are much the same. I felt more alive being a protector in a virtual world than going to the bank, the grocery store, and the office, etc. Well, I understand that. Forgive the paraphrasing, but in the past you said something to the effect of, a virtual world would disappear if you pulled the plug. I like the analogy there, and I think what you're saying, and I think I get what you're saying, but it's got me thinking. In the real world, if you nuke a city, that city is wiped out. There's still other people out there. Some may have been out of town at the time. Some of them survived the blast. Some have survived the radiation. There is still a mass that was once the city. The plug is pulled, but something remains. If you pull the plug on a main box of a virtual world, there is still a multitude of other computers just out there that contain data on that virtual world that additional servers and data can interact with. So a person can become displaced in the real world just as they become displaced in a virtual world. Okay. Yes, there are differences to be sure, but virtual worlds may bridge into reality with real emotion, feeling, possessions, finances, and perhaps cybernetics and robots. Each virtual world server of each game is like a town or city. Perhaps the proper calculations and science applied to a virtual world would further the breakthrough for technology and space exploration. After all, in the Below News story about the space station, there is a pioneering virtual space station. Walk on, Falware. Okay, now, we're going to talk about this virtual world thing a little bit here. Now, we got to understand that virtual worlds, okay, is just an electronic medium of a reality view. Okay, like when you view reality a certain way, and other people view reality the same way you do, you have something in common that gives you a sense of identity, which is cool. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, okay? It's kind of like, you know, being in a religion. You know, not to say that online worlds are cults or anything like that, but it is kind of like being in a religion. You know, if we all worship, you know, the great flying spaghetti monster, and we are all touched by his blessed noodly appendage, then, you know, gradually we all have something in common. We can move along that sort of front. Conversely, getting away from religion, how about Star Trek? Star Trek is not real. Not real. Okay, but you go to these conventions, and there are people everywhere. They're dressing up. They've got identities. They've got rank badges. Going on, people will fabricate their own realities. This is what the human brain does. The human brain fabricates its own reality. God knows I do. So when you consider it that, you know, people are thinking about, you know, the virtual worlds, the avatars, you know, connecting through the ether space, the astral realm of the virtual world, you know, are they actually speaking? Yes, they are. There is results that come from that. Okay. But the problem arises when you cannot maintain balance, when you have people who dedicate their entire lives, and I'm absolutely certain that Falwell will agree with me on this one. If you say, like, let's say you've got a pension or something, or something happened, you've got like a monthly paycheck going on or some shit like that. Well, if that's the case, why don't you become, you know, and you're not able to get out of your house, say you're injured or something like that, then what you've got is you've got like this sort of meat cage that your soul is trapped in, and through the box, through the light fantastic of the internet and all the rest of it, you can release yourself into alien worlds as an avatar and all the rest of it. And that's cool. That is very, very cool. But we must remember that the problem I have with virtual worlds now, the problem I have with virtual worlds is that the concept of the virtual world is amazing. It's a beautiful concept, okay? But there's a large, like it is with a lot of these beautiful concepts, I have a problem with organizations that can profit from directly manipulating the reality of people. Okay, that's the problem here. Like, there always has to be someone who guards the gates and all the rest of it. There always has to be some sort of, like, method of, you know, controlling reality and all that kind of jazz so that somebody has control, I suppose, because I've never seen a way for there to be totally dynamic, because if it's totally dynamic and no one does have control, then, you know, it winds up being dominated by individual groups and all the rest of it. But, you know, I'd like to see, like, a non-profit virtual world. A non-profit first-person virtual world would probably be the best idea possible. Because that way, you can't have people exploited because they get addicted or they feel that, you know, their digital hands are cut off if they can't play their character and this kind of a thing. This happened the same way with role-playing games. But with role-playing games, in pen and paper now, it was all individual groups and, you know, you had your game master that you went to go see. And a good GM is, like, worth his weight in gold. I had, you know, like, I've had lots of good GMs. And some of them, you know, you seriously would take a trip to go, you know, be in this guy's game because he runs such an awesome game and you're able to, you know, play your characters and all that sort of stuff. But now with the virtual worlds, hey, that's, you know, it's kind of transferred across. But we do have to remember that there are real world concerns that we have to be aware of. There are things that we need to be aware of in our daily lives, like, you know, financial concerns and all the rest of it. So that's my only concern. Yes, virtual worlds are not real. In the sense that, you know, you're not really a dragon, you don't get to run around. But, on the online sense, you kind of are. But let's all just remember, it's a box. It's a box and a game, and you are currently an organic life form, and so you have to make sure you have balance there. That's all I'm trying to say, get with that. I don't mean to diss anyone in the virtual worlds, because God knows I've spent enough time in them myself. On to sort yourself out. First off, I don't even know how to ask this. Secondly, I don't understand. I totally understand if you do not wish to give me any information. Very cryptic. Very cryptic. I was on my way home from the hellish pits known as British Columbia Public Education System, reading the works of H.P. Lovecraft, specifically the case of Charles Dexter Ward, and I got to thinking, what if a real-life counterpart to the Necronomicon existed? What if it was based on truth? As far as all good wogs, my job is to seek the truth, and then it popped into my mind. You've often spoken on the occult, your collection of books, and your knowledge about the subject. I'm wondering if you can give me a starting point, a point in the right direction, or maybe just a book to read. Thanks, Vulgan. Okay, Vulgan, it's like this. I actually went on a real trip to go find the original Necronomicon. For a while there, my whole interest was in the occult. Wasn't because, you know, I was all interested in, you know, spiritual. Well, I kind of was. What it was is I was after magic. I wasn't after, you know, the magic like the, you know, let's do a ceremony and it'll affect positive change subtly. I was after fireballs. Okay, that's what I was after. I'm after magic missile. That's why I got into the occult. And I went swimming around looking for real spells and, you know, stuff, you know, that was, like, you know, affected reality right now. None of this, you know, subtle magic stuff. I want, like, conjure demon, go eat this person. Ah, that was what I was after. Did I find it? No. Now, there is a Necronomicon, which you can buy. It's trade paperback. You know, it's made by Del Rey Books. You know, it's based on the Golden Dawn system of magic. And it's pretty hokey. There's also a couple other copies of the Necronomicon that are available, that have been published throughout time. You know, there are different people doing different things. The Necronomicon is not a real book. Okay, there's been a lot of stipulation that maybe it was a collection of books, like saying the Necronomicon's like the Encyclopedia Britannica. It's not a book, it's a series of books. But there are some real occult books. But at the end of the day, if you go looking for these books, man, I got to tell you, it's a dead end. There's nothing down there. All it is a bunch of dudes trying to be more cryptic than thou, talking about secret knowledge that nobody has. There's nothing out that way, okay? So, if you want to go look for it, I hate to burst your bubble and all that good shit, but unfortunately, the Necronomicon, interdimensional gateways, monsters from other dimensions, all that good shit, unfortunately, I have seen no evidence of it. However, if you choose to go looking for that stuff, and if you have better luck than I do, well, baby, you just let me know, and, well, I'll show up. Shit. I mean, if we can get something going on, we'll cut a demon's head off, put it on eBay. Sounds like a plan to me. I would love for the classic, you know, exorcist kind of scenario to be true. You know, like God and the devil and this big war happening and, you know, demons and stuff. Fuck, that'd be awesome. It'd be awesome. Think about it. Wouldn't it be great? I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about your credit card anymore. You'd be all involved in a gigantic spiritual war, which is a big draw, you know, from a lot of these religious nuts. So, you know, I mean, you can believe what you want, but I hate to tell you this. Yeah, the Necronomicon is not real. Sorry about that. Now, if you want to get really psycho, you can start looking into Crowley, Aleister Crowley, and he did a bunch of shit. He was a real whack job. The guy never, he was just a pervert and a psychopath who, like, killed his own kids and everything. He's a total nutbag. But, you know, if you want to read up on some dude who, you know, if anybody was going to get into it or find it, Crowley would have done it. He couldn't do it, so I wouldn't waste your time. On to my opinion piece. Dear Sean, what is the scariest thing that has ever happened to you? Scariest thing that ever happened to you, i.e. waking up with a severed horse in your bed, etc. Now, fear is a funny thing. Now, by scariest, I think you're meaning when was I the most saturated with fear? And there's a couple different kinds of fear, I find. Fear, you must make a friend of fear. Fear and mortal terror. Fear is a funny thing. I used to get really scared of the dark. You know, I mean, I've had a couple of real good scares when I was a kid. I was walking through a basement one time, and there was one of these laughing clowns, you know? Like, the clowns, you squeeze them and they laugh or whatever. Well, the batteries were dying, and I stepped on it in the dark, and the clown went, rawr, 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 and that scared the fucking shit out of me, okay? I mean, that was pretty scary stuff. But in the that's instantaneous fear. We're not. I think you're talking about, like, gripping fear, the kind of stuff that where you might be worried you might have AIDS or something like that, and you're waiting for the test results to come back. You know, that kind of a fear. That's some scary shit. I would say probably the most frightened I've ever been in my life was probably in the first years of high school when I was a scrawny little kid. And what happened with me is there was this, this is back in the late 80s. It was very common, of course, this is before Columbine or any of that shit. So bullying was just considered, you know, part of everyday life. And there was nothing really out there, you know, to help these kids who were being bullied. They just used to get the shit kicked out of them, and there's nothing that could really happen. And, of course, this is still going on today, but, you know, they kind of sweep it under the rug a little bit. But anyway, I would probably say the most scariest thing I ever had happening in my life was when I was going to school every day and knowing and waiting and anticipating the beating that would come after school. That was probably the scariest period of my life because, you know, you'd be beaten up by five, six guys. And it's the actual fear and anticipation of the beating. Which, you know, is really great when you're trying to learn stuff in school to boot. But when the actual term of fear, yeah, I'd have to say that the scariest shit that's ever happened to me is when you have to be waiting for a beating. That is the worst fucking feeling in the world. And, you know, some people don't really, I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but, you know, that's probably when you ask me what is the scariest thing, because I had to think about that. And I'd have to say that that was probably it. On to the news in Return Spring News. Listen to this one. In the summer of 2004... a clam dredging operation off New Jersey pulled up an old artillery shell. The long submerged World War I era explosive was filmed with a black tar like substance. Ooh, what's this? Yeah, this is when you don't play with it. Bomb disposal technicians from Dover Air Force Base were brought in to dismantle it. Three of them were injured, one hospitalized with large pus filled blisters on an arm and hand. The shell was filled with mustard gas in solid form. Ooh! What was long feared by a few military officials in the know has come to pass. Chemical weapons that the Army dumped at the sea decades ago finally ended up on the shores of the United States of America. It's been long known that some chemical weapons went into the ocean, but records obtained by the Daily Press show that the previous classified weapons dumping program was far more extensive than ever suspected. The Army now admits that it secretly dumped 64 million pounds of nerve and gas and mustard agents into the sea, along with 400,000 chemical-filled bombs, landmines, and rockets, and more than 500 tons of radioactive waste, either tossed overboard or packed into the holds of scuttled vessels. A daily investigation press has also found these weapons of mass destruction virtually ring the country. Concealed off 11 states, 6 on the East Coast, 2 on the Gulf Coast, California, Hawaii, and Alaska. Few, if any, state officials have been informed of their existence. Chemical agents could pose a hazard for generations. The Army has examined only a few of its 26 dump zones, and none of them in the past 30 years. The Army can't say exactly where all the weapons were dumped from World War II to 1970. Army records are sketchy, missing, or were destroyed. Most dump sites likely exist. More dump sites likely exist. The Army hasn't reviewed World War I era records when the ocean dumping of chemical weapons was common. We do not claim to know where they all are, said William Frankowitz, a deputy project manager of the Army Chemical Materials Agency and a leading authority on the Army's chemical weapons dumping. We don't want to be cavalier and all and say the stuff was exposed to water and it's okay. It can last for a very, very long time. So that's a little bit frightening. You know, something to be aware of if you're going to be out there, you know, doing the diving thing or whatever. You want to make certain that, you know, you don't go playing around with artillery shells. And it's kind of funny to me that people would even touch an artillery shell. If ever you're out and about anywhere, this is kind of a common sense point, but I'll just bring this out here. If ever you're out and about anywhere and you see anything that even remotely looks like bomb fins or like maybe a mortar shell or something that looks like it could be a bomb of some type, don't fucking go near it, okay? Like, some of these things, they get so touchy from explosives, the act of putting your shadow over it can trigger an explosion, okay? So don't fuck with stuff you don't know what it is. If you have me out there diving or somebody pulls up something, looks, hey man, I found a bomb, don't fuck with it. You don't know what it is. It could kill you. You know, I mean, this is kind of common sense, but I guess, you know, even people who are trained, like these guys from Delaware, well, I guess they got mustard gas all over their arms. So that's a little bit frightening, but that's, you know, we've created this toxic zone all around the country, but what do you do? Now here's some Mud Hut news. Always good to have the Mud Hut news. Police are being advised to treat Muslim domestic violence cases differently, out of respect for Islamic traditions and habits. This is in Australia. Officers are also being urged to work with Muslim leaders who will try to keep families together. Now, hang on now. Muslim domestic violence. Now, it seems to me that, like, if the whole term domestic violence is kind of funny to me because domestic implies that it's somehow nicer. You know, like it's not a big deal or something. It's domesticated. You know, it's not real violence. It's domestic violence. No, it's violence. A guy's beating his fucking wife. I don't give a shit what religion you are. You're not allowed to beat your wife. Not in Australia. Well, not in this country anyway. You know, that's one of the reasons why we don't have Islamic law. Women's groups are concerned that the politically correct policing could give comfort to wife bashers and keep their victims in a cycle of violence. Oh, geez, you think. The instructions come in a religious diversity handbook given to the Victorian police officers that also recommends special treatments for suspects of Aboriginal, Hindu, and Buddhist background. My response to that is, I don't give a fuck what your background is. Don't beat your wife. Some police officers have claimed the directives hinder enforcing the law equally, which clearly it does because you have to do special treatment for Aboriginal, Hindu, and Buddhist backgrounds. Police are told, in incidents such as domestic violence, police need to have an understanding of traditions, the ways and habits of Muslims. Well, depending on what country you go to, some of the ways and habits of Muslims include stoning your wife and lighting them on fire. They're told it would appreciate it. They are told it would be appreciated in case of domestic violence if police consult local Muslim religious leaders who will work against fragmenting the family unit. Fragmenting the family unit, because the family unit's more important than the woman's rights to, like, not be beaten, say. Islamic Women's Welfare Council head Jermaya El Matra called the guidelines appalling and dangerous. The implication that one needs to be more tolerant of violence against Muslim women, but they should be entitled to the same protection. Police should not be advising other officers to follow these protocols. It can only lead to harm. Ms. Almetra said Muslim leaders should be brought into domestic violence investigations only if requested by the abused women. So, you know, this is all about the women. And this is one of the reasons why I'm not really a big fan of cultures that are abusive towards women. Women are not so shit-hot in Muslim culture, as the best I can understand it. I mean, when I look at it here, a lot of these Muslim chicks walking around with tarps over them, looking like beekeepers, you know, got the big burqa on the go. They're kind of thought of as property. You know, pretty much slaves, really, any other way you kind of put it. So, I'm not really too keen with the whole treating women as slaves. Maybe I'm dumb. You know, maybe I'm a screaming liberal over here, you know, thinking that, holy shit, women are people. Women are people and have rights and stuff. I'm way out of control with that shit, eh? Whoa! Don't think so? Go to Morocco. Go have a look at how they treat women in Morocco. There's a nice, good Muslim, Islamo-fascist state. Let's go check that place out. You know, you can buy and sell women there like it's nothing. Put those bitches on eBay. That's how things work in Morocco. But personally, up here, I kind of think of women as, you know, beautiful sacred creatures. Maybe, you know, I have to say I probably even actually elevate them a little bit higher than, you know, us savage, you know, dangly bit morons who have made a big mess of the world. You know, generally, I'd have to say that women are pretty nice. They're probably the nicer, the fairer of the sexes and all the rest of it. So, abusing women, I mean, I think that any wog worth his salt, and it's not often I come out and say something like this, but I think any wog worth his salt, if he's driving down the road, okay, and he sees some dude, I don't give a fuck what his headdress is. I don't care what color he is, but you see some dude smacking out his wife on the front fucking lawn, any wog worth a fuck would stop, get out of his car or her car and say, what the fuck, guy? You know, and definitely engage that shit. That's not on, man. That's not on, and you can't fucking say, well, you know, it's part of their traditions. Their traditions lick ass. Okay, I'm sorry. Not going to work, and if your culture involves abusing women, then as far as I'm concerned, your culture equals shit. Now then, moving right along, speaking of culture equaling shit, let's talk about Desert War news. The U.S. Senate returned to its daily work late Tuesday after Democrats enacted a rare parliamentary rule forcing a private session of the chamber so senators could speak in secret about the lead-up to the war in Iraq. This is interesting stuff. Now everything is coming home to roost. As a result of the session in which Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Pat Roberts and the panel's ranking Democrat Jay Rockefeller sparred for 40 minutes about whether Republicans had failed in their oversight of the Bush administration, lawmakers set November 14th as a deadline for six members of the Senate, three from each party, to assess the progress of the committee's investigation due to pre-Iraq war intelligence. You can bet that this is not getting a lot of press. Today, the American people are going to see a little bit of light. On November 14th, we're going to have a phase-by-phase idea of how they're going to complete this investigation finally, said Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid. The committee will also meet from Tuesday through Friday next week to review staff findings. Democrats say the demand for a closed session was prompted by misinformation and disinformation given by President Bush and his administration prior to entry into the war in Iraq and a failure of Republicans to look into it. If the administration had all the information that they have now, back then, they wouldn't even brought it into Congress for a vote, Reid said, of the Senate's 2002 consent to launch a war against Iraq. We know that there were no weapons of mass destruction now in Iraq. We didn't know it at the time. We know now that we didn't know at the time there was no Al-Qaeda connection. We know now that they didn't have and there was no 9/11 connection. We know now they have no plan for winning for peace. We didn't know it at the time. This is what Reid told reporters in a closed session ended. Rockefeller said the parliamentary maneuver was invoked after Democrats repeatedly promised by Roberts that oversight would be conducted on the war, but nothing came to pass. Rockefeller suggested that regular delays may have been the result of pressure from the White House. Geez, you think so? Maybe, eh? Maybe the White House doesn't want people knowing that because, you know, clearly no one's going to see Bush in jail. Personally, I think that it might be possible if they do impeach Bush, they're not going to impeach him for the right reasons. I think they'll get him out of there because of this war in Iraq, and then everyone will try to, you know, put the 9/11 crisis slash hoax into this kind of container where no one really is labeled as toxic waste and nobody really wants to open it up because the truth is too horrible for anyone to deal with. That's my own personal view on that, but we'll see how it goes. Now, I got some bad cop news. This is a sad story. Okay, sad story, but again, no one was really there. And, you know, there's always two sides to every story. There's the one side, the other side, and the truth. But let's go over the story here. In Madison, for the fourth year in a row, the annual Halloween celebration on State Street ended with police unleashing pepper spray on the crowd. But in a departure from the previous years, the police didn't wait for revelers to turn violent before taking action. Now, so let's bear this in mind. 4 years, every year, okay, well, actually the last 3 years, there has been a riot on this street. 3 years in a row. Every year, riot. Okay? Instead, bars started to empty shortly after 2 a.m. Madison police blared from speakers to a public announcement declaring unlawful the thousands of partygoers who were congregated on the street. Minutes later, police officers in riot gear descended into the crowd, unloading pepper spray on those in their path. They instructed bars and restaurants, which remained open until 2:30 a.m. or 3 a.m., to keep patrons from leaving. Police made the decision to use pepper spray after determining a group of partygoers who were cheering and taunting them was bound to become violent. So they said, these people are going to turn violent. We need to break them up, said Mike Hansen, a spokesman for the Madison Police Department, and Mayor Dave Sisowitz, who monitored the response throughout the night. That was different from the past 3 years when the police used to spray only after Halloween revelers broke windows and lighted fire. So, last 3 years in a row, these people rioted, started breaking window and lighting fires, doing property damage. And this year, they kind of didn't wait for them to do the damage, thereby saving money. Sisowitz and Hansen said police decided this year that the prospect of violence was enough to prompt action because, again, 3 years in a row, the crowd has done exactly the same thing. And everybody knows if you go there and you're going to hang out till that late, that there's going to be violence. That's why you're there. The crowd that remained was there because it wanted to provoke a riot, Sisowitz said. And the police wouldn't have acted, you would have seen property damage and injuries. Because, again, we have 3 years of experience. Authorities said there was no property damage. Hansen said, if you are in a large group and acting disorderly, that's considered illegal. Now, that's where it gets a little bit sketchy here. We have to do what is prudent to make the area safe. But many revelers and other witnesses were sprayed or blocked in bars questioned the decision. They said the police made no distinction between nonviolent partygoers who were leading the bar and possible troublemakers. Police pushed into the city streets and continued to spray onlookers after State Street was cleared. They left in their path young men and women who crumpled to their knees, lifting their heads to their burning faces in fits of coughing. In some places, police continued to spray people even after they were on the ground. Why did they do that? Screamed a girl as she ran from the masked police. There was nothing going on. My God, it hurts so bad. Yes, but it's not permanent. A little bit of pain. It's not like you got hit in the face with a riot baton. You know, you're not scarred. It will put some cold water on you. You'll be fine. All right? I mean, you got to look at it this way. Why were you out there in the middle of the goddamn night in an area at a regular rioting festival and you're all pissed off now that you didn't get a chance to start breaking windows and lighting fires and the cops mace you? They pushed me down and sprayed me twice, said Aaron Olson, 22, a University of Wisconsin-Madison student, as tears ran down his face. Police officer sprayed Olson as he approached a police barricade at the intersection of State Francis minutes later. The police walked forward, spraying dozens of onlookers who turned and ran. Unable to see, Olson remained on the ground, and when the police approached him, two officers pushed him and sprayed him again. We don't know where to go, cried Stacy Schmo, 23, of Madison. They kept coming and spraying everywhere we turn. I call bullshit on that. Some of those weren't allowed to leave bars, said they felt scared and trapped. Noah Freed, UW Center, was trying to leave the pub when he said police blocked the doors. Well, probably because I didn't want you to get outside of the bar and get maced. The cops pushed the door shut. I've never seen anything like this. This isn't martial law. So let me get this straight. They're stopping you from going on the street where there's all sorts of tear gas going on, so you can stay inside the bar and not get gassed. David Schwoger, co-owner of the pub, said his bouncers blocked the doors at instruction of the police, but no doors were never locked. So don't let them outside, because if they come outside, they're going to add to the riot, and they're going to get maced, and that'll be painful, so don't have them do that. The crowd was jumping and moshing a little bit, but I didn't see them do anything that was out of order. Now, this is an interesting story. Now, you notice here, nobody was really seriously injured. Nobody had a broken arm. Nobody had a bruised face. Some people got gassed. Big fucking deal. Okay? And bear in mind, this wasn't like there's the rave in Utah, which was way out of control. Okay, that was fucking wrong. But is this a bad cop news story? I don't know. I don't think so. When you look at it, I mean, bear in mind, last 3 years in a row, university students are there because they know there's going to be some kind of a riot. You go out looking for the shit, you're going to find it. Okay? So, you know, again, I would probably have to say that the cops, you know, what do you got to wait for? You got to wait for people lighting fires, breaking windows, doing property damage before you mace some people? Well, you know, hey, I think they probably made the right call in breaking them up beforehand. And I'm going to get some email about that. But, you know, hey, sorry, this is the really real world. Now then, in no bomb-needed news, this is insane. You know, at least America had a couple planes crash into it. The UK had their little 7-7 bomb crisis, but in Australia, no bomb needed. Police could arrest suspects under a new terror laws as early as tomorrow after Australia's spy agencies received special information about a potential terrorist threat against the nation. Prime Minister John Howard today rushed an amendment to existing terrorism offensive into Parliament after the National Security Committee was briefed on a potential threat. But Mr. Howard would not go into detail, saying it could put any future police or ACO operations at risk. There's a threat. We pass these laws to take away your rights. The government has received specific intelligence police information this week, which gives cause for serious concern about the potential terrorist threat, Mr. Howard said. We have seen material. It's cause for concern. So, you know, I guess that's good enough. We've been given advice that if this amendment is enacted as soon as possible, the capability of authorities to respond will be strengthened. I am satisfied on what I've been told, and the government and the national security ministers and cabinet are satisfied that this is the case. But I do not intend and cannot, and I will not, go into any of the operational details. So they didn't even get bombed. They just, you know, oh, there's a threat. There's a threat. Holy shit. Make sure that we pass these laws. Australia's general terrorism threat level will remain unchanged at medium, despite the information. The amendment means that people can be charged even if they're only considering carrying out a terrorist act, but have not yet decided when or where. So, you know, that means if you're found with books, you get to go to jail. For example, a person or a group of people may be considering killing people or detonating a bomb, but have not yet decided which one to do. Nor the tape, nor the nine, nor the time, nor the method. So if you're talking in a group about taking some people out, you get thrown in jail. All state premiers at the federal opposition agreed to support the changes which passed the House of Representatives today and expected to pass a special sitting of the Senate tomorrow afternoon. Holy crap, Australia is not messing around. Mr. Howard said he understood that people would be frustrated that he could not reveal the details of a potential threat, including which city might be targeted. If you go into a lot of detail, then you wreck the operation. The Australian public will not forgive you, he said. Well, you know, there goes any rights that they had in Australia, and they didn't even have a bomb to be concerned about. Gotta like that. Now let's look at some POW news, shall we? Prisoner of War news. In Fort Bliss, Texas, a man once considered a top Al-Qaeda operative escaped from a U.S.-run detention facility in Afghanistan and cannot testify against a soldier who allegedly mistreated him, a defense lawyer involved in a prison abuse case said Tuesday. Isn't that interesting? What are the odds? What are the odds? Omar Al-Farouk was one of Osama bin Laden's top lieutenants in the Southeast Asia until Indonesian authorities captured him in the summer of 2002 and turned him over to the United States. So this guy was buddies with Osama bin Laden. A Pentagon official in Washington confirmed Tuesday evening that Al-Farouk escaped from a U.S. detention facility in Bagram, Afghanistan on July 10th. The official spoke on condition on anonymity because of the sensitivity of the information. An Army lawyer for Sergeant Alan J. Driver, a reservist accused of abusing Bagram detainees, asked Tuesday where Al-Farouk was and that the Army had done and what the Army had done to find him in time for Denver's for Driver's court proceedings. Captain John B. Parker, a prosecutor, said Al-Farouk and three others escaped from the Bagram Detention Center and have not been found. If we find him, we will make him available, Parker said. So that's pretty interesting that these four guys escaped. That's, like, should be a huge news story. How the fuck did these guys escape from something like that? But anyway, members of Driver's company testifying in by speakerphone in court Tuesday identified the detainee driver is accused of abusing as Omar Al-Farouk, who's referred to as Time Magazine cover story in September 2002. The article titled Confessions of an Al-Qaeda Terrorist detailed his plans to carry out attacks in Southeast Asia, including plots to bomb U.S. embassies near the anniversary of the September 11, 2001 attacks. So this guy is a full-on piece of shit who's all about, you know, killing people. Driver's Army lawyer, Captain Michael Waddington, questioned members of Driver's company who had access to Al-Farouk, specifically asking whether the CIA had ordered military police officers to do certain things to Al-Farouk. Al-Farouk could have been the first detainee to testify against a soldier in the Afghanistan prisoner abuse case. Now, this is hilarious to me. This fucking guy, okay, is a war criminal. This Al-Farouk character, okay, he's all about killing innocents, bombing people, okay, and they're worried that they're smacking them around a little bit. This is fucking nuts. A driver, a reservist from an Ohio-based 37th Military Police Company, was charged with maltreatment and assault of three detainees, including one who later died, which does that mean he died from the abuse or whatever, at the Bagram facility in 2002. He's accused of slamming Al-Farouk against a wall. This is a guy who hung out with Osama bin Laden, is a direct enemy of America, has been openly confessed to plots involving killing thousands of Americans, and this guy's going on trial for slapping this guy against the wall. A fucking wall. I'd stand him up against the wall myself. Fuck. Yeah, stories like this just, you know, I'm like, what the fuck? This is what happens when liberal press gets a hold of this shit. You look at this, you gotta understand, these people are the enemy, man. This isn't like some dude who you pulled out of a village in Afghanistan. This is a major hype. You know who this fucking guy is. He's a guy who authorizes, you know, sawing people's heads off and shit. He is human filth. I'm sorry, but there are people out there like that. Now, if you smack him around a bit, throw him into a wall, and now this motherfucker's on trial, this is insane. Insane. Gotta fucking throw him up against the wall and shoot him a couple goddamn times. A piece of shit. The guy's already fucking confessed to it. Okay, well, let me see. How about we shoot you full of drugs, you tell us everything you know, and then we check you out. You have a nice fucking day. You know, I'm here to tell ya, there's no place in war for politicians. Just leave it to the goddamn generals. That way, we don't wind up with as much war. If you don't like war,
don't go to war. And that way, when the politicians, you know, they should be debating, have negotiations, and when war breaks out, the generals should just take the fuck over. That way, you'll save more goddamn lives if you want this kind of bullshit. This is crap. You got to think long term here, guys. This is fucking garbage. Oh, God, that story makes me nuts. Anyway. Also in POW news, the CIA has been hiding and interrogating Al-Qaeda captives at a secret facility in Eastern Europe, part of a covert global prison system that has included sites in 8 countries that was set up after the September 11, 2001 attacks, the Washington Post reported Wednesday. I wonder why they had to do it in secret. Probably because you take a soldier and slap him against a wall, slaps, you know, Al-Farouk, for fuck's sakes, against a wall, and now he's on trial. That's insane. The secret network included several democracies in Eastern Europe, as well as Thailand and Afghanistan, the newspaper reported, but did not publish the name of the European companies at request of the senior U.S. officials. The U.S. government officials declined to comment on the reports, which was likely to stir up fresh criticism of the Bush administration's treatment of prisoners in its declared war on terrorism since the September 11th attack. Russia and Bulgaria immediately denied any facility was there. Thailand also denied it was host to such a facility. Now, you know, I understand that it's not about, you know, people need to understand what the fuck torture is, okay, and what torture is not. Okay, smacking a guy around as a prisoner of war, why don't you ask any fucking soldier what they expect being a prisoner of war, okay? And I'll tell you, even the so-called, you know, oh, hideous torture that was suffered at the degree of, you know, inside the prisons of Abu Ghraib and all that kind of shit, why don't you take a look at what is going on with some of the American prisoners? Why don't we just go tit for tat? What's the Al-Qaeda's policy on prisoners? Just make sure, you know, because clearly, you know, if we're going to make this all, you know, fair, if we're going to try to claim the moral high ground, let's see what their take on the prisoner situation is. You know, let's do it that way. A little bit more positive news. In pot news, Denver, voters in Denver have passed a measure that make it legal for residents over the age of 21 to possess up to an ounce of marijuana. Initiative 100 won by a margin of 53 to 46. So apparently, it's been somewhat legal. Opponents have said it will have no practical effect because the city ordinance will be trumped by Colorado state law. However, Nine News political analyst Floyd Theroux said it will send a powerful message to groups in the country working to decriminalize marijuana. Which, to be totally honest with you, I'd sooner see pot legal than I would alcohol because, well, you know, alcohol is pretty fucking crazy. Well, when you think of all the domestic violence it actually causes, it's pretty sad. And today's daily hack is Gas Buddy. Gas Buddy can help you find cheap gas prices in your city. It is comprised of 170 gas price information websites to help consumers find low gas prices online. Very, very cool. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back on Monday with Samarian to get you all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 11 one-time donators, 52 continuing subscribers, and 2 new subscribers for a total of 65 people. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit ranmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Fairlight Children, 808-Bit. And I'm going to leave you now with a track by Dynamite Hack called Boys in the Hood. Very, very cool. So until tomorrow, that's what servers said. End of line.
Woke up quick at about noon. Just thought that I had to be in Compton soon. I gotta get drunk before the day begins. Before my mother starts bitching about my friends. About to go and damn near went blind. Young niggas on the path throwing up gang signs. I went in the house to get the clip with my Mac-10 on the side of my head. I bailed outside and I pointed my weapon. Just as I thought the fools kept stepping, I jumped in the flow, hit the juice of my ride. I got front and back, side to side. Then I let the Alpine play. I was pumping new shit, buying WA. It was gangster gangster at the top of the list. Then I played my own shit, it went something like this. Cruising down the street in my 6-4, jocking the bitches, slapping the hoes. I went to the park to get the scoop. Knuckleheads out there, cold shooting to move. Car pulls up, who can it be? The friend fresh El Camino rolling kilo G. He rolls down the window and he starts to say, it's all about making that GTA. 'Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. Come talking that trash and we'll pull your card. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, I ain't said shit. Bored as hell and I wanna get ill, so I go to a place where my homeboys chill. Fellas out there trying to make that dollar, I pulled up in the 6-4 Impala. Greeted with the 40 and I start drinking. From the 8-ball my breath starts stinking. I gotta get my girl to rock that body. Before I left I hit the Bacardi. Pulled to the house, get her out of the pad, and the bitch said something to make me mad. She said something that I couldn't believe, so I grabbed a stupid bitch by a nappy ass weave. Started talking shit, wouldn't you know, I reached back like a pimp and I slapped the hoe. When her father stood up and he started to shout, so I threw a right cross and knocked his old ass out. 'Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. Come talking that trash and we'll pull your card. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, I ain't said shit.